For me, I'm drawn to the sea. It's who I am. I'm from Dingletown and everyone knows me as Brindy. Fishing is in my blood, you know. And I was never any good at school, so any chance I got, I was out on the boat with my father. Well, fishing would be passed down through generations of the Griffins. Everyone in my family were fishermen, about the one who went for America. I remember years ago when I was on the boat with the father, and he used to say to me, "Brendan, fishing is in your blood, garçon." This always made me work a bit harder, that maybe one day he might pass the boat on to me. Years have passed and my father's given up fishing, so now I'm working on my own. I always have the local radio on though. Tis a friend to me really. Keeps me company when I'm on the boat, when the weather is good or bad. Sure, I'd be lost without it. I listen to Radio Kerry, and this is my voice in the kingdom.
I want to thank the people that voted for me. I got votes in every box, and we worked hard for them. We travelled up roads, we travelled down roads, we went up boreens and lanes, we went to the top of Cannon Tool. I have to say, a loud message has gone out from Kerry today, whether it was in Killarney or Tralee or North Kerry or all the other counts, because I know that a clear signal and a clear message is being sent to Indy Kitty and Hogan and Riley and Shatter and his gang, that he's hurt the people. He are hurting the people. It's time to stop. He promised a lot and he have delivered nothing. And that message has to go forward from here, because it's unfair what they're doing and what they're continuing to do. They're insisting that this present generation will have to pay in their lifetimes for the wrongs that have been done. And that's wrong, because Germany didn't finish paying for the Second World War until 2 years ago, and now they have all the money of Europe. We should tell them fellas in Europe, we'll pay you all right. We always paid our way, but we'll pay when you have it, when we have it, and until then you'll have to wait, because the people of Ireland, the people of Kerry, the people of Killarney and South and West Kerry did nothing wrong. They worked and they are working, they're doing their level best.
The bodies of a woman and a child have been found at a house in Killorglan. They were discovered in an estate just outside Killorglan. Aisling O'Brien reports.
Around 8:30, the bodies of a 27-year-old woman and an 8-year-old girl were found at a house in the Langford Downs estate, which is around half a mile outside Killorglan. It's understood the mother's body was found downstairs and the daughter was discovered upstairs. It's believed the woman is not Irish but had been living in Kerry for the past 5 years.
Go to a Radio Kerry Facebook page, and many people have been posting up on their own Facebook pages this morning in relation to the deaths of Jolanta and Enrica in Killorglan, the murders carried out on Saturday. The Garda investigation continuing, of course, but the mass last night, over 1,000 people from the community showing up to show their solidarity, children and classmates of Enrica from Sculvera there as well. And two of those people are on the line. There's Helen O'Sullivan, Murphy Upkin, and Orna Eccles as well. Orna, I said, from the moment those children sang in the choir, the tears flowed down my face. The true meaning of community spirit was so evident in our church this evening. The power of prayer is huge. My heart ached so bad to the end of Mass, but I was very proud to be part of the unity in our community displayed tonight. May God hold them in the palm of his hands. And both of them are on the line. Orna Eccles, if I can ask, the ceremony last night, beautifully put together.
Beautifully put together from start to finish. It was a credit to everybody that was involved. I thought that the reading by the school teacher of the little child herself, I thought the words were just so poignant. Each word, it just made me shiver, just as a mother myself. And I just couldn't stop the tears. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. It's just devastating for the community. I think people aren't sleeping. Some of the ladies that were out with me, they told me not alone were they double locking their front and back doors, they were locking their bedroom doors. And you'd never think that you'd hear something like that in the town of Killorglan.
Why is Colm Cooper such a great footballer?
We asked Mhuire Fogarty, who knows everything about Kerry football, and Ger Hartman, who works with some of the world's top sports stars. Maybe they know why.
There's no footballer in Ireland like Colm Cooper. He's certainly respected as the greatest football player of this generation. And in fact, is one of the best football players that Ireland has ever produced. What's striking about Colm Cooper is he loves football. He's got a great passion for football. He's very enthusiastic. He's actually an atypical footballer in the sense that his physique defies his talent. Colm's great characteristic is that he can read the ball before it bounces. He can fool the other opponent by looking like he's going to run with the ball, and with a stroke of genius, he then passes the ball.
He's very unique. He has great balance. He has great skill. He has great vision.
Selling dummies left, right and centre.
He can see things around him. He can see things coming from all directions. That's the trait of a great footballer.
It must be a goal, Johnny! Goal by the goats! Goal by the goats!
He can do things that no other footballer can do. And the big thing is, he makes them look easy.
Saw Colm Cooper, gave it to the goats, and the goats rolled the ball into the back of the net.
Is what Colm Cooper has, is it nature or nurture? Is it pure God-given talent, or did he train and condition himself to be as good as he is? And I suppose anyone who plays a sport religiously from the age of five, especially in the right environment, like in Kerry, and whose life revolves around it, and then if you add the ingredients of unbridled enthusiasm and dedication to their sport, and a will to win.
The coach is inside amongst them, he has it, Colm Cooper!
And they are the ingredients that make a star.
Cooper! One magical goal by the Cooper!
Without a shadow of doubt, people will be talking about him in years to come, in 100 years' time. And whatever Kerry team will be picked, they'll be picking the best ever Kerry team. They'll say Colm Cooper will go in there.
Left leg bang into the back of the net by the gym for Mark Shandavouli. It's only a knack to could script a goal like that.
Answer me this. Real cases, real people, no drama. For more, go to radiokerry.ie/answers.
Independent councillor on Killarney Town Council, Niall Batty O'Callaghan, who is on the line. Good morning to you, Niall.
Morning, Jerry. How are things?
Not too bad, not too bad. I suppose it's a question I should be asking you because you, I suppose, and your family have been the victims of a false website and text campaign alleging falsely linking you to sexual acts. First of all, when did you first hear that something like this was out there?
To be honest, I got wind of it on Tuesday, and I'm kind of reeling from it, really, Jerry, because, I mean, When I got it, I, in fairness now, I had some good friends who got texts, who rang me and asked me to meet me. And when I met them, they showed me these texts. I was devastated. I went to the guards. I went to my solicitor. I just can't understand how somebody can put your name up on an internet site, blacken you for high heaven. And sure, it was up there for a couple of days before, do you know what I mean? Before I even knew it was there, you know?
Yeah.
So between the jigs and the reels, the guards have been involved for a while now, and I'm just devastated. Like, Jerry, I have a wife and two children. I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I have a mother, and I have brothers who are going through their own health issues at this present time. And here I am dealing with this absolute and utter crap. And
the worst thing about it,
Jerry, is if I was a weaker person, I'd be in the lake by now. I'm stressed out from it.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand where people get really stressed out from internet bullying and everything, Jerry, and like, something has to be done.
Can you talk about the nature of what was said? What did the texts kind of outline, Niall? Obviously, they were fairly shocking in their
content. Basically, that I was involved in sex acts with men and women. And, Jerry, that's not good enough at all. You know what I mean? I'm at home with my wife and family all weekend. I'm not involved in anything like that. I never was. And to have somebody put this up on an internet site and then somebody, it's like Valley of the Squinting Windows, decides, oh, hey, this is great news, and texting everyone, texting all the media outlets in Kerry, saying, have you heard about Niall O'Callaghan? He slept with both men and women at the weekend. It's just not good enough, Jerry. I'm devastated from it, and I'm in shock. And the worst thing is, I'm so sorry for my family that they have to be dealing with this kind of stuff. You know, yeah. And the people out there that sent the text, I hope you're listening, because I will get you.
A newspaper had been on to me to say to me, would we agree to say, for example, giving a blood specimen at this stage? And I said, because Joanne is absolutely, does not want to get involved in anything like this because she cherishes her privacy and her family's privacy. But under controlled circumstances, she would give a blood specimen at home, which could be used for comparison purposes. But I also suggested that the newspaper, if it wanted to do it properly, should prevail on the state to make the tissue samples, which I'm quite sure are deep frozen somewhere, of both infants available, and let the DNA be done. I suggested
in the
that 2 years
of
ago.
Transparency.
Well, I mean,
and what happened?
We have no doubt that's the correct conclusion to report it. But if it's going to silence this, if it's going to write the final chapter in this issue once and for all, let it be done. Science can now unequivocally lay the whole thing to rest. But I don't think there's any need to exhume both bodies because I'm quite sure the tissue samples must have been retained somewhere.
Yeah.
There must be somewhere in some lab.
Yeah.
And
course,
I don't know anything about
there's
it.
There's the big issue of the Carsevine baby. Hasn't been resolved.
Not responded. There is a murderer, if you like, technically still alive. The sadness of this, Jerry, the final comment is there is at least one, if not two people out there, 30 years on, who know who the mother of that child is. That's the saddest part.
Very sad thing.
Very sad. Yeah. That at this stage, if it could be somehow or other, that segment of it. But I understand, and we all understand, why nobody might come forward to say, yes, I am. But there's the sad part of it. Somebody has the toughest secret of all to retain.
That baby was buried and was named John and has its own tombstone. It says, I am the Kerry baby, baptised on the 14th of the 4th, 1984, named John, I forgive.
From the Radio Kerry newsroom, I'm now joined by Aisling O'Brien. What are we hearing from across the county?
Well, Alison, as the lights flicker here in studio, we've reports of tiles falling from buildings in Killorglin. The Annadale Road in Killorglin from the Bianconi Inn to Glencar Cross is closed due to fallen trees. Very dangerous there. There's trees fallen in Manus, Beaufort and on the Milltown to Killarney Road. The Tralee to Ardfert Road is now totally blocked by fallen trees near Liscahan Garden Centre. Trees and power lines are down on the main Tralee to Phoenix Road. ESB wires are down near the Strand Bar in Ballyferriter. A section of the church wall in Ballyseedy has fallen out onto the road.
It's just beginning to ease off. We've had more than two hours of absolutely ferocious winds, driving rain. Probably the worst I've ever seen in daylight hours. Sometimes at night you hear terrible winds in the trees and that, but to see it in the daytime today, it's definitely the worst I've ever seen.
And roughly what time did it all kick off?
It kicked off at around about 11 o'clock, shortly after that the power went. And things started flying around our property. Yeah. Our recycled bin, I'm looking at the remains of it outside, it totally disintegrated and it's scattered all over West Kerry now. And we had a rubbish bin outside yesterday my wife, she was clearing out stuff around the house and threw in a whole lot of old telegrams from the time we got married, Deirdre.
My goodness.
And so they're scattered all over West Kerry now. So if anybody finds a telegram congratulating Ted and Eilish Creedon on their wedding, you know, ignore it.
You've been trying, I suppose, to protect them throughout it all as well from the realities, I suppose, of what happened.
Yeah, you know, to give them a certain amount of truthfulness, but also balance it so that it isn't horrific, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I do. I completely understand, because you're dealing with life and death issues that you don't expect to have to talk to your children about at such a young age, and how to deal with that and to protect them, to try not maybe have them overly affected by it at the young age until they're able to understand maybe what happened. So it's a difficult balancing act, I'd say, Maria.
Well, it is. You know, our youngest daughter, you know, she was just petrified that she was going to escape prison. So then, you know, you have to kind of put it into child language and say, well, it's not going to happen because he's inside a cage with a lock, and then that cage is inside another cage and that's locked. And then it's inside another cage. And then when eventually you get past all the cages, there's a big, massive door. It's really thick, like a castle door. And then there's great big, thick walls that not even Spider-Man could climb.
That's the level you have to break it down to?
Yeah, to explain. You know, it's been kind of constant for her, you know. It's that fear that he might want to come and kill us, and then to say no, that no, he's not going to do that.
The moment of truth came when I was standing up in, I don't remember whether it was Little or Aldi, gazing longingly at an air compressor, for which I had absolutely no desire or no reason, having bought something that I didn't know how to put together, much less what it was for, and suddenly realised the futility and the stupidity of the whole thing, and how maybe the Germans have given us the money and have bailed us out, but by God, they're taking it back for us in spades.
It's the middle aisle in these shops. The middle aisle is the one where you have all these things on specials. One week from the next, there'll be something completely different, and you'll find yourself picking it up and looking, maybe I need this.
Oh, not only do you need it, but it's something that you can't do without.
You have to have
you
it.
You have to have it at all costs.
I'd say there's a lot of fellas over the last couple of years, Mick, because of probably economic circumstances, that have had to go and do the shop for the first time.
Yes, and probably that's why the country is on its knees in the way it is. do you know, it's incredible. You go out to buy a pound of sausages and a tin of peas, and then there's a strimmer, and there's a set of sockets. I find sockets particularly alluring, you know, so much so that I have about six sets of them at this stage.
This song is your tale. It's your story of it. You sung it in John B. Keane's. And by the way, if you want to watch this, we're going to put a link to it on the Radio Kerry Facebook page, if you want to go to that. It's The Ballad of Little and Aldi, Mick McConnell, John B. Keane's Barb. If you put in The Ballad of Little and Aldi, you'll get it.
Well, the wife, she broke her ankle when she tumbled off the bike, leaving me to do the housework, a job I never liked. And doing the weekly shopping seemed a dreadful chore to me, till I discovered little dee Aldi, little dee Aldi, little dee dee. Now I just can't wait for Thursdays, when the specials go on view. I'm the first man to the trolleys, I'm the first man in the queue. For now I know what women mean about retail therapy. It's little dee Aldi, little dee Aldi, little dee Aldi, little dee dee.
There was a barman, a local barman indeed, when the explosion went off. He was living in a flat overhead.
I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was blowing up, anything like that. When I hopped off the roof, I looked to my left and the laundrette was totally destroyed. So when I seen the laundrette totally destroyed, I just wanted to just climb down and just get out of the building altogether, like, you know. So
in relation to the where the laundry was, your apartment or your flat
was just
very, very, very close to it, just above it.
Yeah, it was just above it. It was just right above the laundry, like, just right above the laundry. When the explosion happened, it just shot up in the air, and then when it blew the roof off and everything like that, it all came crashing down on my roof, you know. So my initial it was just probably adrenaline, like. I have three sunroofs in my apartment. So what I did was I just jumped out one of them to just get out of the apartment, because there was smoke coming through my front door and I was afraid to open the front door just in case anything came in. So I just decided to just escape out the window,
and all you could see then was rubble.
Oh, just rubble, yeah. I mean, like everything, it was just debris and everything. And when I looked over, there was people just screaming at me, asking me, was I okay? And I just had glass in my feet, I had glass in my knee, I just had glass everywhere from climbing out, like, so.
When you say your apartment was right above it, does that mean that it was attached onto the actual building?
It was attached onto the actual building, yeah.
And what's left there now?
There's absolutely nothing left there now. Everything is just gone, so.
You're a very lucky man.
Yes, I'm a very lucky man, yeah. We can all complain about, you know, valuables and all that were in the apartment and stuff like that, but to me, look, I got out and that was the main thing.
What was the lowest point for you, Paddy, throughout the whole, from your business collapsing to being a prisoner?
Well, the really lowest point now is, and this is gospel truth, my own wife don't even know it. Nobody knows it. One day, we were having a bit of flaming row about something like money probably, this and that, and the finish, I said, I'm going out for a while, I said. So I was doing a bit of shooting, and I just got my gun, and I went off, and she didn't take any notes, went into the van, took off my gun, down the road, and I pulled up at a gate down the road, a gate of a field down the road. I came out, and I actually wrote a suicide note inside the van, on the back of an envelope. I had a big brown envelope, I have a picture, and I said, what I said was, goodbye to my wife and daughter. I said, I love you very much. And I said, I'm sorry it's come to this. That was the lowest point. And I actually came out of the van, went into a field, had two cartridges inside it, had a gun standing on the ground, up here to my chest and my ribs. And I just went completely berserk out here. I started talking to myself and shouting to myself inside the field, and I had two fingers down the two triggers. I was there for nearly 20 minutes.
Twenty minutes.
And I finished, I was saying, I said, I felt myself saying to myself, pull me a cord. I don't know what happened. I said, go on, pull me a cord. I still calm myself, talking to myself inside the field. And I can tell you just what happened, just what saved me. I was on the brink of just doing it, and a neighbour of ours was walking to the shop, and she just coughed. She just, and that's just for that, only for that cough, that girl neighbour of mine made, I wouldn't be happy there. I would just call myself a coward, and press a new coward, and maybe worse than that, call myself different. Oh, it was unbelievable. I just, and only for that, just woman, just girl, it's my own age. Just
happened walking, to be walking
just
by.
Just walking by, going to the shop for a message, and she just in she passing, she just gave a cough, and that's really bad.
It snapped you out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Over here, Billy. Did you see any police over at the old address?
Nobody, McCarthy. Looks like Hegarty kept quiet.
Hegarty's a tough man. He won't talk. But the police will be sniffing around the boarding house by morning. Best to avoid St. Giles altogether for a while.
What do we do, McCarthy? Took us months to put this plan together. Should we reach out to the Brotherhood for help?
Safest thing is to abandon the whole plan and start fresh. The British Empire's a great beast with many weak points, Billy. There are always more targets.
But Hegarty was our link to the Brotherhood. Will they even deal with us now?
It's all right, Billy. After all the Jubilee arrests, we're probably safer working on our own for now. Besides, I've made a new contact recently. I have a feeling this is going to be big.
Big? What is it? A new target?
I can tell you more as I work it out. I just need you to do one more thing for me.
Anything?
Come here. A noble end for a loyal soldier, my boy. But you're not as tough as Hegarty, and loyalty doesn't always guarantee silence.
Two Gardaí jumped out of their car, and they got their batons, their steel batons, and one of the Gardaí started beating this pit bull, and it was like beating a brick wall, is what I could describe it as.
Really?
It was doing absolutely nothing.
And what was the other little dog? Must have been in an awful state.
Oh, he was roaring, and like you could hear, I mean, the one time that I did see the pit bull, that he let go of the dog around, he had him around the mouth area first. When he let him go at one stage, he caught him by the leg, and all you could hear was the bones cracking like.
Oh,
now, a fair crowd had gathered at this stage, and like, my wife and him were, you know, they were very upset. Like, people were very upset, and it was an awful thing to have to witness now.
You know, I'm not trying to over-dramatise it, David, but you do wonder, like, I mean, that pit bull was loose. If it was a small child, what could have happened?
That's it. Like, you see, like, what brought it home to us is you'd see it on the TV. You'd see it on the TV where it happens in England, you know, now and again, and you'd say that's desperate what happened to the child. But when we saw this yesterday, that's the first thing that came into our head, and we were talking about it all day after, because we said, "Geez, if it was a child that was there, or children playing, like, and this thing got in notion to attack them, like, there was nothing, there'd be nothing we could do. Like, you'd actually, one person said actually, and they were right, you'd want a gun. It was just horrific, and it was horrible. And look, Deirdre, as you know, I'm in the fire brigade. I've seen every kind of a thing over my last 12 and a half years in the fire brigade, but." Sunday was the only day that I felt useless, that I could do nothing.
The winner of the 2013 Writers' Week in Listowel single poem competition, Karen O'Connor, a poem about being a godmother to a stillborn child and the distress of meeting the child.
Godchild, stillbirth, for Louis Joseph Collins. I am your godmother, and yet when you were born, I didn't want to hold you or touch you. I couldn't see past those plastic flowers they'd wrapped your tiny peeling fingers round, or the image of you being transported from the labour ward in the blanket-covered Moses basket, or the room with the holy pictures and the low-watt lamp where you waited for our introduction. I was blinded by your frowning forehead, your skin dark from waiting to be born. Hold him, pick him up and hold him. I took pictures, closed my eyes through the lens, looked at the small table lamp, the crochet blanket, the floor. I watched your Nana, though, my sister, take away the plastic flowers, scoop you gently into her arms and talk to you. Talk to you. My darling little boy, I'm your Nana and I've waited a long time to meet you. It's okay, my darling. You're safe now. Nothing can harm you. And without warning, you were there in my arms, surprised by the weight of you, the feel of you. I held you to my breast and closed my eyes. And I met you. I met you. No words can explain that meeting, but I met you. I met you. Now, when I am quiet, alone, painting, you pull the kitchen chair to the table, kneel up to get a better view. Your curls wiry and unruly bounce with your rhythm as your small fingertips dip in the paint, often leaving their mark at the edge of my canvas.
You met Mandela in 1990.
I certainly did. I'm actually looking at a picture of myself and Nelson Mandela meeting in the Mansion House in 1990. And it's just, when I look at it, we were just in awe of him. He was such a special person. I don't think that words can actually say how special he was. Mm. He was just amazing. And for him to hand us his Medal of Bravery and tell us that we were brave people, when him and so many other people could have lost their lives and did lose their lives, Steve Biko being one of them. And, you know, for him to tell us we were brave, it was just, it was very emotional.
Before we go any further at all, we must ring the winner of today's four-star getaway competition, which is, of course, a lovely midweek stay in the Louis Fitzgerald Hotel in Dublin. So let's see if they're there.
Hello?
Hi there, is this Edward Dowling?
Yeah.
Hi Edward, how are you?
Not too bad, how are you?
I'm very, very good. This is Brendan here from Radio Kerry.
Huh?
This is Brendan Fuller here from Radio Kerry.
Oh yeah.
Edward, you sound like a busy man there, are you?
I am, doing a bit of painting.
Oh, fair play to you. And of course I hear a cow there in the back as well.
Yeah, yeah, and that's all the
fields. Jeez, you're stuck with all the jobs. Painting, minding the cattle and everything.
Oh, mate, it's all good.
Do you know what, Edward? You sound like a man who needs a lovely midweek break.
I could use one, aren't I?
Well, listen, Edward, you were pulled out as the qualifier from Talk About today, as you heard the cue to call. And, well, you have won a trip for two, a night stay during the midweek in the lovely Louis Fitzgerald Hotel in Dublin.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so
thanks
get
very
you.
Much.
No problem at all. You deserve it. You sound like the busiest man in Kerry.
Oh, this is all good.
It's all good. Listen, there are cows to be fed and minded and everything, and of course you have to paint as well. So get back to that and we'll get on to you as well about the details of that prize, okay?
All right, thanks.
Cheers, Edward.
Thanks.
Have a brilliant
thanks
one.
Very much.
Bye,
bye
now.
Bye.
Good luck. Bye. Bye.
This story shows that education isn't everything. Long ago, there was a man named Michael Mickey the Clerk Sullivan who lived in Ardee. He was employed by the parish priest Father Barrett. Michael had no education. One Sunday morning, the parish priest fell sick suddenly. Michael was sent to Laura Church to tell the people that the priest had fallen ill and that there would be no mass that day. It was about 12 o'clock by the time Michael had arrived with a horse and sidecar. He told the clerk, Charles McCarthy, to tell all the people that Mass would not be going ahead that Sunday. I will not tell them. Tell them yourself, said Charles. Michael then stood up on the pillar of the gate of the church. All the people gathered around him and he began. My dear people of Lorach and Ardee, the priest has fallen ill. We will have no Mass today. I would advise ye to go into the church, say your prayers, go home quietly, avoid evil and do good. Well, said John Larry behind him, that was as good as any sermon I've ever heard.
One of them always says, Nana, how does everybody know you? Because they're growing up in England and they don't see this kind of a friendliness of people to other people. My name is Mary and I'm from Rislington. I'm so used to, I'm sure we all are, going into a supermarket or walking down the street or walking a country road. Everybody you meet, you'll know. And they'll all say hello and I'll maybe stop for a chat. I think Kerry have something of their own. I remember, you know, even listening to the late Paddy O'Shea, you know, that's unique, that kind of an accent, that kind of an outflowing of talk and humour and warmth. So I think Kerry, even above any other county, have that. It's just me. Kerry is where I come from, where I belong now, and I couldn't imagine going anywhere else. Radio Kerry, it's my voice in the kingdom.